You found another edition of The Mincing Rascals. This is John Williams. Thank you for that. And have you done your duty? Make a New Year's resolution in advance now. That's right around the corner, to share The Mincing Rascals. Give us a good rating, too, but tell your friends to listen to this podcast. This week on The Mincing Rascals, we talk about Eddie Johnson, for goodness sakes. How could we not? But we also talk about the police story in Chicago that should get more attention, and that is the story of that body slam. Then we go to Trump land and the House impeachment hearings. We start with the trivial. Was it wrong to mention Barron Trump? One of the witnesses did. And then we dig into the details. I hope you dig the podcast this week. And remember, too, you can always email us. I hope you do. John Williams@WGNradio.com. Today is Thursday. It's December 5th, 2019. Strangely, it's 12:38 in the afternoon. Hi, this is John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals. Recording now at an all-new time, which doesn't mean anything to you, the listener, but it's kind of critical for us because my new radio shift at WGN is from 9 to noon, so we're able to record early in the afternoon now, which means that the conversations here will be even fresher because we tend to post this around 5 in the evening on Thursdays. Okay, go.
Heather Sharone, managing editor and City Hall reporter of The Daily Line.
I want to do it like a football, like you're watching Monday Night Football. Joseph Kaufman, host WGN.
Then you got to give your high school or college.
The Ohio State.
The Columbia College.
The Southern Illinois University, Carbondale.
Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism.
Lisa Go.
Lisa Donovan, Chicago Tribune. I write the Spin Politics newsletter. University of Nebraska, Lincoln. GBR. Let's go Big Red, in case you didn't know.
GBR, go Big Red?
Yeah.
I did not.
Eric Zorn, the sober and faithful columnist from the Chicago Tribune, University of Michigan, go blue.
I just lost a bet because I thought you were going to say Eric Zorn, not his wife.
Yeah, his wife.
Drinking with a woman that was not his wife.
Here is what I know about Eddie Johnson's firing. You all tell me what I have right or wrong. He's no longer, as of yesterday, Chicago Police Superintendent, correct?
Correct.
October 17th, he went to a bar called Ceres.
October 16th,
yeah. Thank you.
We need a little bell. It goes ding when he gets around.
Ding.
We needed that a long time ago. It's named after the Greek god of grain.
Correct.
Which is so cool. I mean, I love that. That night, he drove home. He passed out or fell asleep at the wheel at a stop sign. This is the scenario that I'm just trying to paint as we know it. Police officers were called to the scene. They did not give him a field sobriety test, correct?
Correct. Correct.
They let him drive home. Mayor Lightfoot praised him last month, but this month fired him because...
He lied.
He lied to her about what happened that night. Is there anything else that we, in fact, know about this story?
Ceres Cafe closes at 8 or 9 o'clock, and he was in his
last
car at 12:30. So he went to, they said that, and I think it was the Sun-Times said he went to Valare, which is the Italian restaurant here in Streeterville, after that.
Nice place, Valare, too.
Is that the timeline? I wasn't clear about whether it was after. Okay.
So that's a night.
Especially
if you started Ceres.
I don't know how much of this we actually know, but the reporting is that he was, to use a Mike Sneed term, canoodling with a woman who was on his security detail, also a Chicago police officer, and was, and so this was a big part of the problem that Mayor Lightfoot had with him, which is this is a Me Too situation. This is something that we now really recognize is inappropriate for a supervisor and an underling, as this case may be, to be in that kind of a relationship. And apparently he lied about that, and he may have lied about how much he had to drink. Mayor Lightfoot was furious about this.
Eddie Johnson intentionally lied to me several times, even when I challenged him about the narrative that he shared with me.
The thing that puzzles me is how could she have not figured all this out soon enough not to have gone out on a limb for him when he announced his retirement. I mean, it was a gap of what, it was a week or two, mm-hmm. right? Between the time or more. And so she gets out and talks about, you know, what a great guy he is, and
there are hugs.
I want to reiterate to the superintendent and to the city that he continues to have my unwavering confidence and support.
There are, you know,
how
so
does
long.
She not know this? How does this?
She's probably mad at somebody behind the scenes too, then, right? Well, I mean, Eddie Johnson lied to her, but doesn't she have anybody to vet this a little bit?
Well, the first question we have to ask is: there must be body cam footage of this, And then just all the other questions that would have attached to this situation. And evidently, she didn't push hard enough. Because the whole question, I mean, we've been talking about this story since it happened. And we've all had questions about it. Didn't the mayor have questions about it? Obviously, she did. Obviously, she does now.
She said that she had asked him, talked to him, and even pressed, I believe she said she pressed against some of his storyline, and he assured her that what he told her was accurate. One of my questions is maybe, you know, did he think that was accurate given the healthy pores at Ceres Cafe?
I mean, he didn't know what the truth was?
I don't know that. I just wonder aloud whether he had all of the pieces
of the puzzle to present to her. Heather and I talked about this on the show, too, is does any of it matter at the end of the day because he was terminated? So are we ever going to see the investigation? Are we going to see the body cam? Are we going to see anything of the security footage that was at Ceres Cafe? Are we owed it as a society, or can the mayor say there's no investigation? You're never going to see the light of day.
It's a red herring. He's not the guy anymore.
Well, I think it raises questions though about operations there. First of all, if there was a romantic relationship between the top cop and a subordinate, he's
married to a Chicago police lieutenant. Right. So if romantic relationships are verboten,
I believe that happened before he became.
No. They got married,
but they were in a relationship before then.
Does her employment matter? Where she works, the woman with whom he was having the beverages?
Yes. It matters.
And just expound on that a little.
Well, he brought her onto his security detail, which is, everybody has told me, is sort of a plum assignment because you're not on the street of, you know, West Englewood at 4 o'clock in the morning dodging bullets. And then after this incident happened, WBEZ reported that he moved her to a relatively cushy position. And one thing that struck me in that WBEZ story was former police superintendent Gary McCarthy saying that this officer now has a scarlet letter on her uniform. And I took a deep intake of breath thinking that this woman has had her career compromised by this whole situation. And we've yet to hear her side of the story or anything along those lines.
It's Gary McCarthy's commentary. And it's absolutely sexist. Yes. I mean, come on.
Yes.
What is sexist? The notion that there's a scarlet letter on her.
What
I heard you to say was that her position amongst her peers is compromised because they don't like what's happened here.
No, just that she's basically left holding the bag for this situation in the department. And I would assume that she is a capable, accomplished woman in a overwhelmingly male department.
Well, then in that case, I wish that the reporting was not a woman, not his wife, but rather a subordinate in the police department.
Right, that's exactly what I've been trying to sort of get at. What I've been writing about this, too, is because a couple of veteran law enforcement officers I've talked to actually kind of got after me and said, why are you not reporting on a commander, somebody that the top law enforcement officer in the city, possibly, you know, having a relationship with a subordinate? Why is that not the focus here?
Yeah.
It's inappropriate, and it's... In their mind, that's the core of this thing.
It's presumptively...
That's a completely different narrative, too.
It's presumptively coercive.
Right.
That's the problem. She might have... Who knows? I mean, she might have come on to him, whatever, but you have to have rules about this kind of stuff, and you just can't have subordinates and supervisors having romantic relationships because... It is complicated in many different ways, and again, it is presumptively coercive.
The BZ article today, Patrick Smith's work, is I think the most damning thing we've seen, because if he would have promoted her to his security detail because he was having a relationship, and then moved her when he was trying to cover up the scandal or what happened, knowing that there was going to be some pushback to her being on the security detail, that shows a little bit more of the cover-up part of this that I think may have more legs, but at the same time, all this would lead to the fact that the superintendent would be terminated. He was.
Yeah, but,
so I'm not sure that you're not going to get a criminal suit on him. A lawsuit in some form. I don't know how that works, but it seems to me that this is all of us talking about it after the fact, but there's not much that's going
to
come from it.
Well, I think, again, systemically, they have to look and see sort of who do they have running the department and how are these things approved? You don't just get to – well, you do if you're the superintendent. You get to move somebody into a new position, but –
whoever he or she, anybody who has moved into a different department, that takes some kind of line of approval. And so everybody knew what was going on there. You can't tell me that somebody didn't crack in and take a look at
it. So if Eddie Johnson doesn't have that night at Sirius or whatever the hell happened that evening, if he's not drunk at the wheel or stopped at that stop sign, then...
We don't know anything about this.
But that's not the worst of it. In fact, that's not the it at all. What you guys are talking about isn't whether or not he was drunk at the wheel of a car and got away with it. You're talking about, did he have an inappropriate relationship with a subordinate?
And were there larger steps taken to not only cover that up, but cover up what happened that night?
No, I get that, too. Yes. But then would you also say then that, here again, if that lady was a civilian, if it was just some girlfriend, if you will, who didn't have any connection to the police department, that changes this conversation considerably, too. I think that's where a lot of the pushback was among our listeners and maybe your readers. They didn't like the description of her as a woman, not his wife, because Eddie Johnson can do whatever he wants with his private life. It doesn't affect his personal, his work, unless maybe, as you guys are describing, it's a subordinate. And then we have an inappropriate issue there.
Right. Well, John, I do think that, though, we do have this conversation. If he's stopped, and as the Sun-Times reporting has shown, that he was fast asleep, awakens to these officers being there, rolls the window down, shows his badge, and takes off. I still think that, we're sitting here discussing this. I don't know whether...
But then answer me this. Why did Lori Lightfoot fire him?
So we asked the mayor six different ways during this press conference. What is it that you know now that you did not know when you stood next to him and said, happy retirement? And she would not answer that question out of deference to his wife and children. And that, I think, is sort of why we're all talking about, well, maybe it's this and maybe it's that. We literally don't know what changed the mayor's mind and what made it, in her case, not anything that was a gray area question that deserved immediate termination. Was it what she saw on the body cam footage? Maybe. I've heard reports that she had seen that several weeks before, so maybe not. I don't know. Was it the video of him at Sirius? You know, was he stumbling drunk?
Which begs a bigger question.
I don't
know. There's video at Sirius? For all the traitors who have been at happy hour right now are going, yee.
But if Sirius closes at 8, It's probably from the other restaurant then, right?
No, they said it was.
They said it was Sirius.
Sirius security.
Yeah. So he had 4 hours to sober up then.
Yeah. And well,
but he went to Volare.
Volare afterwards, yeah.
So there's no footage from Volare.
And I think what bothers me about it is that at first he got up and the mayor made this point, was he said, look, it was an issue with my blood pressure medication. I didn't take the new medication. My doctor had changed it. And as we know now, that is pretty much a bald-faced lie, right?
What's the bald-faced lie?
That it was due medication. To his medication.
He also said that he was exhausted.
I'm sorry, but how do you know
it
that?
Could be
how
both
do you
and,
know that
right?
it wasn't?
It could be both and, right?
I mean, why do you say it's a bald-faced lie?
Because you can't be suffering from exhaustion and having trouble with your medication and having trouble with this very serious health problem and at the same time out cavorting at multiple restaurants. This was a Tuesday night, people. You know what I mean? This was not, you know, a weekend. Oh, I found that. Just that would have been.
I'm not tracking with you, Heather. It seems to me like that original story that we thought we had that was mixed up with his medication, and he'd had some drinks, and it's late, and that's why he passed out at the wheel.
He left out, John. The first thing he said to the mayor was, "My medication was messed up. Sorry."
No, that's what he told the media.
Yes. That's what he told the media.
And he never ever said anything about having drinks.
He left drinks out.
But so you can't say that you're not. Well, he said he'd had a couple of drinks,
but not until later. First press conference, he said, "Look, I've ordered an internal investigation. There's nothing going to be found. I just had a problem with my medication. I'm really sorry. We did everything above board."
Yeah.
So the larger question to me is the same question I had in the wake of Laquan McDonald's murder. Is there a deep-rooted culture of protection in the Chicago Police Department that protects supervisors at the expense of the public? Now, I could have been driving down that street. Eddie Johnson could have had whatever happened to him. He could have crashed into my car. He could have hurt me. He could have hurt my kids. He could have hurt any other Chicagoan out there. And are we enabling a police department that is incapable of policing itself and holding whoever accountable for misconduct?
And that's such a big part of this, because at the end of the day, that's what Eddie Johnson was supposed to be doing.
Correct.
Reform the police department after Gary McCarthy and the officers.
What an opportunity he had when the cops pulled him over or came upon him. If he would have He did say eventually he wanted his own internal investigation, right. But if he had said, guys, no, we've got to give me the field sobriety test, treat me like
and
an average
somebody
citizen.
Somebody, drive my car home, I'll ride with you, boom, we're not having this conversation.
I don't, but you have overnight officers, a lot of the overnight folks are newer. I'm not giving them a pass, I'm just saying, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you
I think at this point, I'm okay, yeah, are you okay, yes, because that was the question that was supposedly posed. Are you okay? Yes. And off he goes.
That the problem I have with that is not necessarily, I agree. To pin it on any overnight cop who's going to be like, I should have given a sobriety test to the superintendent. That's tough. Everything's out of whack.
In the real world, that's a tall order.
The issue is the next day and what happened and transferring the woman out of the security detail and covering up. Let's make sure that didn't happen. Yeah. All the stuff that Heather just
imagine talked. The oh crap moments going up the line.
Right.
In the department.
No, really?
Exactly.
No. Really?
And this has been going on. The cover up stuff, the protecting stuff, this has been going on since John Birch.
Right.
This is not new.
Got to give credit then, I think, if we're saying that there needs to be a culture of accountability, then you have to give credit to the mayor who came in like that and said, I saw the stuff, you're fired.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I feel the FOP's coming out and saying due process.
Isn't that funny? The FOP was like,
I don't know.
The, for his head
I don't know until we get a tighter timeline and a better understanding of what her decision-making process is. I'm not knocking her. I know she's new.
Really?
Yeah.
What's a better play for Lori Lightfoot in this case? Not having had that at her first press conference?
No, I think we need to have a better understanding as of Monday morning. And she's announcing that she is letting the superintendent go for cause to explain why, beyond just,
I want to know when she saw the body cam footage, when she saw the other footage, when the inspector general briefed her. And I want to hear from her what was the tipping point.
Right.
We don't know the answer to any of those questions.
And I'm sorry, if she's going to answer any, when she said, out of respect to his wife and kids, I'm not going to talk about this.
Oh,
that was
wait, that wasn't a signal.
That was nonsense. Either you come out and say I'm firing.
It was literally waving a red flag. Yes.
Everybody, don't look over here.
Yeah. I am. Either you come out and say I'm not going to say anything about this. He's done. Goodbye. He lied to me. Period. That's it. And walk off the podium.
No.
But you don't. I mean, you don't sort of halfway. You don't throw him under two wheels of the bus. And I think that the situation when you're Eddie Johnson, you're in that kind of situation. You put every time you do something like this, you put your wife and your kids at risk. So that when it comes out, the story's going to come out. Mayor Lightfoot should have just been candid about that. And I have the same question everybody else does about what she knew and when she knew it. But overall, she seemed to act with dispatch, and I think you got to praise her for setting the right tone.
I want to quote Eric Zorn's column. Among the clinkers in the fired Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson's public statement Tuesday, the most tone-deaf line was, quote, reputations are not built in a day and not damaged in a day either. This pithy, self-serving summation fundamentally misrepresents the fragility of reputation, a key concept for all whose good name is important to them. And then at the end of the piece, it's really well done, Eric. You said downfalls are often followed by redemption, especially when the alleged transgressions are as ordinary as infidelity, drunken driving, and dishonesty to cover it up. I had to chuckle when I read that because you make it sound like no biggie, but I know that's not what you meant.
Who among us?
But then you said there are often second acts in American life as raw emotions fade and the disgraced find their way back into our good graces, the same painstaking way they got there in the first place. And I thought Tiger Woods did this. Bill Clinton has done this. Maybe Bill O'Reilly is in the process of doing this. Bill Cosby, not so much.
Not
but
so
I mean,
much.
We've seen people who have fallen and we've judged, and then Americans are pretty forgiving if you
express contrition,
if you're honest,
if you're transparent and contrite, the thing about reputations is it takes a long time to build them up, and you can piddle them away in an hour, not just a day. And that's what Johnson got totally wrong.
You think his reputation will survive this 10 years from now? They're going to say, what about Eddie Johnson? They're going to say 30 years cop.
Steve Rhodes in the Beachwood Reporter pointed out that Eddie Johnson falls in line with, if you look at the heads of the CPD and the CPS under Rahm Emanuel, they've all been scandalized. Everyone except for Jean-Claude Brizard, who was incompetent. but the point being, you have Barbara Bird Bennett, who's in jail. Forrest Claypool had to step down because of an ethical accounting error. Gary McCarthy was fired for Laquan McDonald, which in my mind if he saw that tape and tried to cover up, is way bigger than Eddie Johnson falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
And my point
is,
there are a lot of scandals that have come out to the heads of departments.
And
what about
and the top, and the top
years,
cop, what is it, four? The last six have been bounced?
Yes.
They were shown the door, so fired.
Everyone apply for this position.
Yeah.
That's funny, because I thought our governors were the position that was most, you know.
Well, what does that say when you look and you see that Eddie Johnson was a hand-picked by Rahm Emanuel? I mean, the police board, which included Lori Lightfoot at the time, had suggestions for people who are outside of Chicago.
They gave him three nominees.
Yeah, and he said, nope, we're going with Eddie Johnson. He's like, I don't want this. He's very clear.
We don't want anybody outside.
But the point being, I mean, what does it say about Rahm Emanuel's tenure that everyone that had headed up either the schools or the police left in scandal? That's crazy.
Good point.
Speaking of the cops, the story that I think should be getting more attention this week, I mean, this is great. John Kess called it a soap opera. I forget the headline, but it was something along those lines. But the thing that maybe to me is more nuts and bolts about the police in Chicago is that body slamming of 29-year-old Bernard Kirsch. Let me see if I got my facts right on this. He was allegedly drinking vodka in the public way, I think is how they described it. Was that near a CTA stop or something?
Bus stop, yeah.
And during an altercation with officers, he evidently licked one and spat on this person. Is that correct?
Yes.
And he's now charged for that. That's assault. But the officers have also been suspended, two of them, in relation to this case. The video, which is not the official police body cam video, but from a passerby who happened to be witnessing this, shows the officer picking him up, bear hug from behind, reaching him up, and like Roman Greco wrestling, just bam, slamming him down to the ground. It's on the pavement, and in fact, the man's head hits the slightly elevated curb. I don't know how the guy survived it.
I'll take one side, you guys take the other. The only thing I had on that, when I saw that video, was when the newscaster said that, you know, he had allegedly spit in his face. And I find that hard. I find, obviously, the response to be very violent. But what do you expect? If you're going to spit in a police officer's face during a don't do this moment, I don't know. Like, it's either going to be, you know, head against the bus terminal or against the car, or in this case, he threw him to the ground. It's hard for me to have any sympathy for the guy if he's choosing to spit in a police officer's face. That's just me. I get that it was overly violent and he's getting obviously being suspended, but come on.
The man we know now is seriously mentally ill and may not have had...
Now as a result of that, or was it the time?
Was it the time? He suffered, yeah. So that he may not have had the capacity to comply, and that... You know, there has been so much emphasis of reforming how Chicago police deal with mentally ill people when they interact with the police, and sort of a focus on calling trained counselors and de-escalation techniques.
You're right.
And
I thought this officer had used some de-escalation
tactics. They said he did.
FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, the police union president, said that he had tried some de-escalation tactics to wait. The public needs to wait and see the body cam video before making a decision. But I guess I thought at the heart of this, that kind of action was merited when somebody... I'm not disagreeing with you, Justin, about that's, it's disgusting to have somebody spit in your face, but I'm not disagreeing with that. It's awful. It's your awful. Reaction probably would be...
It's one of the most inhumane things to do to another human being.
But on the other hand, they're trained to
you're right.
take this tact when they're facing some kind of threat. It is a real physical threat. And I'm just not sure.
He could have killed the guy. You should not spit on somebody. I don't know where to grade that. I've missed the mark on this kind of topic before. But that officer knew what he was doing. I don't know how much harm he intended to impose on him. But it looked to me like he was acting out of anger. He was acting out of rage.
And that's the point I would make to Justin, which is, you'd be furious. I'd be furious. We'd all be furious. It was a very human reaction to lash back at the guy, to punch him, because it's not just gross; it's dangerous. The guy could have HIV, spit right into his mouth.
Which would you rather have happen to you? Which would you rather have happen to you? Me spit on you or me pick you up and body slam you on the curb?
What Eric is going to say is they're trained to not do that, right? Like they're trained to be able to say that if someone spits in your face, you have to be trained to know not to do that.
You have to be.
I would not be able to do that. You would not
I would not be able to do either. So I totally understand his reaction. It's pretty clear to me by the force with which he threw that guy down that he was mad. And he wasn't just, he was administering some street justice. But we have a long and bad experience with police officers administering street justice.
I don't want to necessarily be all in one side. It's like moving to the other side. That's one of the problems in here is because there have been too many times where we've had human responses to crime or to whatever, and we've seen police officers go beyond, above and beyond what is the natural.
That is a huge part of their training is learning how to de-escalate these situations, how to handle people who are out of control like that. And if he had just grabbed the guy and like pushed him to the ground, we wouldn't be talking about this. No one would have no one would have even cared about that.
Well, that's
video.
The point you were bringing up, right?
He picked him up and threw him down from like the guy's head was 6 feet above the ground, and he didn't just like drop him. He threw him, and the guy's head bounced off the curb. Yeah. It's amazing that he lived. I think,
and I appreciate that we want to give the officer the benefit of the doubt. It's an incredibly difficult job. One that I could never do in a million years. But the fact that we cannot trust that they are telling us the truth about what led up to that incident is why it is so damaging to have the mayor straight up call the former police superintendent a liar who lied to her and to the public. If that is the tone that he set, how can we trust any official word? And I gotta say that this should be burned into the hearts of every Chicago journalist, because dozens of us wrote stories about the in the immediate aftermath of Laquan McDonald's death, and all of those reports were complete not truths, for lack of a better term.
And in part because all the officers who were on the scene seemed to get together and they all seemed to write reports.
That's the theme
and witness
of what
we're not even sure if this guy spit on him. We're not even sure.
So what's different?
That's when I heard that he spit on him and that there was a lot of fluid in the spit. And I thought, wow, are you guys layering this story?
What makes me believe that is if you watch that video through, after he throws him on the ground, the cop who threw him to the ground kind of walks away and he's like wiping his face on his sleeve. Like, oh my God, that's gross.
That's not how I read that, but go ahead.
You didn't see it? No,
I didn't think that. I thought the reason he did it was like, damn, I may have just killed this guy. I didn't think he was wiping spit. I think he's like, what did I just do?
I believe and I will stipulate that happened. If that's not the case, then we're talking about a completely different issue here. But the question is, this guy really overreacted in the situation.
The cop did.
I think.
But you more as much as anybody here are saying, though, that when somebody spits or licks you, good Lord, maybe because you're mentally ill, Heather, maybe because you're just, you don't care and you want to inflict.
You're drunk. I mean, he may be.
Okay.
Sure.
That's a terrible thing, but I just think that there's a measure of reasonableness that the officer just did not respond with. And what really bothered me, what you said, Justin, was you said, what did he think was going to happen? What do you expect? When a cop comes up to a person of color and says, hey, show me your ID or something, and then everything goes south, a lot of people will call into your show and mine and say, well, hey, what do you think?
I'm sorry.
If the officer asks for the ID, just show him your ID, even if you don't have to show him your ID.
But my point,
just show him your ID.
My point is, in that case, if the guy is being pulled or being ticketed or approached by the police because he is doing something criminal, and in this case, drinking on the street is criminal. Let's just say you can judge it whatever you want.
It never happens outside of these bars.
I was
going
to say, all of the bros in Wrigleyville would like to have a word with you.
Yeah. But the point being that for them to say, hey, you can't do that, throw that away, and for the guy to be adversarial to the point where he spits in a police officer's face. Now, again, Heather's right. There needs to be I don't know what's fact and what's fiction, and if the cops all got together and they're telling us that's what happened, and who knows? That's what happens when you lose the public trust with situations like Laquan McDonald or like we're talking about here, the superintendent. But at the end of the day, if it did go that way and this guy spit right in his face and in his mouth, I'm just saying, as a human being, that's where you're like,
totally.
And you're right. You can't do that if you're.
And
a cop,
we're asking cops to be superhuman about their restraint.
Yep,
I get that too.
Absolutely.
That's a tough order for them.
But we also give them a lot of power and lots of. We give them guns and we say, okay. I mean, you can see like, well, he was so mad he shot him, and it's like, well, there's a certain proportionality of response. And again, I know it's easy for all of us to sit around here. We all have desk jobs, and we can say, well, gee, they should be more restrained. It's a tough job, Heather said, you know. Yeah.
The House is now drafting articles of impeachment.
The facts are uncontested. The president abused his power for his own personal political benefit.
President Trump said, let's go, let's get this over with, bring it on, which I think that would be my attitude also. If I wanted to enjoy my holidays, I'm not going to enjoy my holidays if you delay my impeachment proceeding. I would rather I'm going to be miserable either way. Let's get this thing done with. And by the way, the sooner the impeachment begins, the sooner he'll be exonerated or not found not guilty. And he'll have a better chance at reelection or whatever the hell else it is he wants to do.
The farther away it is from the election that they take care of this, I put that in quotes, the better it is for Trump.
Although, you know, having said all of that, you and I may be agreeing on that point, Lisa, for just a minute. Is that in fact true? I mean, maybe he gets to be the victim if the impeachment were closer to next November.
My sense is that the farther away it is, the better, because any bad news, you know, with this news cycle that's 9-10 months old is better than 9 or 10 days old.
The one story that I pulled from the impeachment hearings was the professor who referenced Barron Trump. And Melania Trump went to Twitter and said, how dare you? And she got all really mad about bringing a minor into politics. But when you hear what the professor actually said, she didn't really reference.
She made a pun.
Contrary to what President Trump has said, Article 2 does not give him the power to do anything he wants. And I'll just give you one example that shows you the difference between him and a king, which is the Constitution says there can be no titles of nobility. So while the president can name his son Baron, he can't make him a baron.
I feel like that's such a great thing about our society right now, that we're going to use everything we possibly can and manipulate it whatever way our political opinions sway. And I feel like in that one, I saw the headline first where I'm like,
I did too.
Geez.
I thought, wow.
Yeah, and then I read
Baron
it. And then I saw a play and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This was a pun. It had nothing to do with the kid.
Right. I was listening to it. So I was sort of like, oh, did I miss something? Because I was actually listening to her.
I had the exact same reaction.
Yeah, that is, you heard it in real time.
I heard it in real time
react that way.
And kept moving. I didn't think about it in the way that I actually did feel bad. I was quite a bit younger when, Chelsea Clinton got picked on by SNL. And that was sort of like, oh, God, thank God that's not me.
Wait a minute, refresh my memory with the Chelsea SNL story.
There was an SNL skit when Bill Clinton was in office. I don't remember it precisely, but it was something along the lines of like a Marilyn Monroe singing happy birthday to Clinton or something, and then pointing out into the audience, and there was a Chelsea Clinton person dressed as Chelsea Clinton. It was like, I don't know, who are you pointing to, me? And Marilyn Monroe says no, and she points to the Chelsea Clinton, like, I'm singing to you. And it was a, I don't know.
Classic.
Well, of course, and it was Rush Limbaugh right. who called her as ugly as a dog and just ridiculously personal things. So I saw a lot of coverage this morning on Twitter by political journalists saying, oh, this was an unforced error by the Democrats. They should never have even mentioned Barron Trump. And I got to say, what immediately came to my mind was when we say to a woman who's in an abusive relationship, why didn't you just make his dinner? Gosh, why did you have to smart off? You know what I mean? Like, why didn't you just sort of try to keep
him calm?
How
are those connected, those two thoughts?
Because anything that somebody in an abusive relationship does can be used to sort of blame the abuse for. And this, it really seems like the Trump administration and the national news media is in an abusive relationship where they will seize on anything they think will give them political, you know, sort of advantage, and then blame the Democrats for doing it when they took it totally out of context.
Yeah, I'm not liking the way that that played out, and I feel like it was almost they were looking for anything they could seize upon. And Melania Trump's tweet, I think, was the unforced error to me.
And
I'm just like, this is you're making
how
it
dare
ridiculous.
You?
Yeah. And I don't think that it is unconnected that this was a female law professor who was delivering this very impassioned plea for the rule of law and sort of to follow the Constitution.
Saying, Russia, if you're listening, you know, A president who cared about the Constitution would say, Russia, if you're listening, butt out of our elections.
And that time and again, we have seen the Trump administration attack powerful women when they have spoken up against them. And it is something that truly just grates on my professional
soul. Well, but I thought
it was
clumsy. Nancy Pelosi today, the tweet about she had a fit. That's yes. She said a fit when I'm like, what's
okay, but
I think that Melania Trump gets to defend her child, though. I don't know.
But there was no attack for him.
What's the right? attack? You can't mention his name because Fox News has been mentioning his name all day today and all last night. They're talking about Barron Trump. So you can't say, well, you can't mention his name because that's all she did was mention his name. Didn't say.
It was clunky. I thought, boy, that was a very circuitous way to make that point.
Sure.
And Barron is kind of hands off, isn't he?
But it was a pun. It was. Yeah. It wasn't
nothing
like,
to do with the first kid.
Agree. I heard in real time. I moved on. I didn't think much about it. Really, it didn't. It didn't strike me when I grasped that at the time. But I thought something.
So
else
do you think Melania's reaction was political?
I
then
think it was totally political.
Over the top.
Absolutely.
Phony. I don't think she actually felt any umbrage
parents.
At all. I think that they opportunistically grabbed on this. I mean, what if Don Jr.'s name were Barron? What if it were reversed and he'd made a joke about the adult son? Would anybody have said anything?
No, okay, because...
So you mentioned the kid's name, and that's an offense?
That's a radioactive topic, I think, in the Trump household, because it's the children, it's a minor, and because maybe Barron Trump has a learning disability and everybody gives him distance. And so I just think it's not smart to... You're making a squishy face over there.
I've read enough... commentary and heard enough commentary from parents about just leave the kid out of it. It is her child. I'm not going to sort of push that back either.
I would argue that the president lost the moral high ground on this when he attacked Greta Thunberg, the climate change activist who is 16, who is a minor, who has mental health issues.
About minors, yeah.
So
this child was born into this family. Whatever the case, I think Melania has the right to say her piece, and I'm not sure.
I think if Melania wants to be mad at anybody, she should be mad at whoever told her it was a good idea to speak to a high school assembly in Baltimore two
Oof.
Weeks ago.
That video.
And
it is my pleasure to introduce to you the First Lady of the United States of America.
And when she came out, she got booing and jeering not only at the beginning, but at the end. And the kids were dismissive the entirety of her speech.
Yeah,
and I thought, how did you think, in Baltimore of all places, the place that your husband said is a cesspool. Right. So who thought that there would be anything to gain by that?
That's some bad staff work, as we say in the biz.
A bad advance.
Holy cow. But this is all trivial relative to what's happening here. We should be talking about the impeachment maybe of the President of the United States. Did you guys feel that the House made its case or that the Democrats made their case? Or the public opinion polls really haven't changed much on this. As an exercise, do you think they did a good job of
it? Yeah, I do think they did. I think it seemed to be measured. I thought that they did the behind-the-scenes stuff. Then they went in front of the public. They let us hear it in their own words. Now it's in the Judicial Committee. And we got to hear from yesterday scholars that were talking on both sides of the aisle. I don't know. I felt like it was pretty straight ahead, and nothing has changed. And I don't know if anyone can debate the fact that the president is using his power as the president of the United States for his own personal gain. And that's the part that at the end of the day, you're like, I don't know if that has changed in anyone's mind. Even he has said he's done it. The question of Republicans are
getting
over it.
Or that there's nothing wrong about it, that there's nothing criminal about it,
that's
nothing impeachable about it.
Right. Nothing's changed in that regard.
That's the voice that I think we've been missing here. And that is that, okay, he did it, but was it a crime or was it a high crime and misdemeanor? Is it an impeachable offense?
It was appalling. It's appalling. You use your presidential power, you use the power of taxpayer money to extort/bribe an ally, a foreign country, until they announce that they're trying to dig up dirt on your political rival. That is just way beyond what Nixon did or what especially Bill Clinton did. This is really bad, John. And I feel like when you're saying, well, did they prove the case? Yes, they proved the case. The witnesses were very strong. Now, did they have John Bolton and Mike Pompeo? No, they didn't. But why didn't they have them? Because Trump and the White House has refused to let those people testify, and they've held back documents. If these people could exonerate Trump, you know they'd be there in a heartbeat. This case has been made, and we are just in our tribal corners. The Republican Senate isn't.
Well, you are too, Eric. I mean, that's, you know, what you see, think is so plain to see is not seen by Republicans in the House or Senate or 39% of the people that support the president, right?
Yeah, I know.
I'm looking forward to the Senate trial.
I think it's a cultist reaction. I don't see how objectively you can look at this and say this was okay. I mean, you can say I don't care, and I think that's where the Republicans are. Like, hey, he's Donald Trump. This is how he acts. This is what he does. We don't care. That's really the only way you can say this is, you know, because you can't.
Well, Senator Kennedy said last Sunday that, you know, maybe there is something there.
And if you're going to be fair here, you're going to have to investigate everybody. And the president
it's been done.
And the former vice president. No, and it hasn't, Chuck.
If the president has a theory about it, if there's murmurings or mumblings about it, maybe we should accommodate the president. Ask the Ukrainians to do some sort of full-scale investigation, and who knows what we would find out. We didn't know a lot of things until first we reacted on mumblings and murmurs and rumors, and then we had investigations and we discovered things. So
but there's a process for that, John. You go through the Justice Department. It's formalized. You don't ask them to say, you got to come on CNN and make an announcement about this.
There's no evidence they actually wanted an investigation. What the president is quoted as saying is that he wanted the announcement of an investigation.
Right.
And that, I think, should give a lot of reporters pause about what they do day to day, that he was hoping to basically use the coverage of this investigation announcement as a weapon. It is essentially a weaponization of the news media.
I'm looking forward to the Senate trial because I would like to see the Republicans in power making a case that this was wrong or right. Meaning, or running.
Yeah, we get your point.
They don't get to talk. This is one thing that I think people don't really realize is that senators are not part of this trial. They don't. It's not like these hearings.
They're the jury.
In the House.
Right.
They're the jury. They sit there silently and take it in. So there will be a House manager over there prosecuting, and there'll be, I think, some defense attorneys, and then there'll be Chief Justice Roberts up there. Maybe he'll be wearing this Gilbert and Sullivan outfit that that Rehnquist wore for the.
Well, does the president testify on any of these things?
He could.
He would love to.
No, he would not.
No, he should not, but he would want to. Don't you think, Eric?
Such a liar. He must know.
Yeah, but I mean, he'd love to get up there and tell
us. I think if he really wanted to testify, he would have been interviewed by Mueller, and he was not.
And he would have shown up at maybe some of these hearings. He was invited. He even suggested, hey, maybe I'll testify or I'll provide written testimony. Nothing.
A different subject before we go, guys. The newsroom just walked in as we were doing this and handed me a piece of paper from the city that is relative to a conversation I had earlier on the show today about marijuana laws. Mm-hmm. And that if you, so you will not be able to smoke marijuana in public places. Mm-hmm. Think of it as alcohol, right? Wherever you can't drink, you're not going to be able to toke. But you will also not be able to smoke marijuana in a public place where there's a reasonable expectation that other people will see you. So on your porch, on your balcony, in your backyard, if it's publicly viewable, or your front yard, on your front step, mm-hmm. you will not be able to smoke
Which
marijuana.
Is not the case with alcohol.
That's
correct. So I don't understand that. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, the news is that Mayor Lightfoot and the interim superintendent are saying that's not true. That's not going to be.
John has a piece of paper in his hand.
It's not going to be the case. that you will be able to smoke.
I think we're getting ahead of it. John has breaking news here.
Well, what I said was the interpretation was the language of the law. The city has now said, while the state law prohibits cannabis consumption in a quote-unquote public place, which is defined as anywhere you can be observed by others in public, the Chicago Police Department recognizes that an individual using cannabis in their own backyard or balcony poses no direct threat to public safety, and no resident should be arrested or ticketed solely for such a scenario.
I just want to say that directly contradicts a flashy, nice Twitter video that the Chicago Police Department put out yesterday that was what started all this coverage that said, don't smoke in your backyard, don't smoke in your, you know, on your balcony. We will come arrest you.
That's what I read this morning as well.
So there is a very serious communication accountability problem right now in the Chicago Police Department, because those two things can't be true. Because if you have a like but here's what the mayor's prop PR problem is now, is that you had all sorts of black and brown people getting on Twitter and Facebook to say, so you're saying that a police officer could come onto my property and arrest me for smoking a legal amount of cannabis had I done it in a closed room away from windows? Well, what if there's a small window? What if I have a peeping Tom? So this is, you know, I mean, I'm all bring on the miscommunications. It means we will be busy for the rest of our lives, literally. But this is a very serious problem.
Are we in danger? I mean, because Michigan just December 1st and other states have rolled this out. And are we in danger of messing this
out?
Rolled
this out, I see what you did there.
I actually,
is Illinois bumbling this?
I don't know that January 1, this thing's going to be set up. I think that there are questions about, you know, from the governor's office on down to city council about whether
there are,
you know,
some very angry aldermen.
Yeah,
there
was. Well, this is so easy. If it's a legal substance, I ought to be able to consume it in the privacy of my own home, front porch, or backyard. I mean, yeah, that's not hard, easy, is it? But it is part of the growing pains that you have, because it's not just a new law. This is kind of a seismic societal shift, and so I guess there's going to be fits and starts about something.
You realize
like this.
Why they did that, or why that language. It's just probable cause. It gives them the opportunity, police, to go to some place
yeah.
they want to go.
Right.
And they're like, you were smoking weed outside, and now we can, search all of you. And, I mean, that's the idea.
Because
right?
you don't have a broken taillight in your backyard, but I can like certainly do this.
So I haven't looked at the data lately, but so many of arrests, you know, from cars started with I pulled them over because I smelled cannabis. And when that goes away, I think there's a significant amount of consternation amongst police officers whether they're going to miss larger law-breaking crimes.
I thought that they could pull them over for that.
But it becomes a harder. You have a built-in defense. Well, I wasn't smoking in the car, officer. I had smoked at home
and it's on my clothes.
And it's on my clothes, so you don't actually have probable cause to believe that I was doing it in the car. This was the whole debate a couple weeks ago in the city council committee, because the mayor said, well, you shouldn't be allowed to impound cars for possession of cannabis anymore. And a bunch of aldermen from the west side said, wait a minute, how are we going to stop open air drug markets from operating if we can't impound people's cars? And it was literally 4 hours of my life I will never get back of debating over what it meant to have an illegal amount of cannabis in a car and whether that should qualify.
What's your take on that?
Well, I think it's problematic, because if you want to say, look, this is a legal substance, you can't use that as probable cause to take somebody's car from them anymore. Like, if you're drunk in your car and you've got an open container, you don't lose your car. You just get arrested for drunk driving and charged with whatever you're charged with. The drug war has relied on being able to take people's cars and to stop them from sort of moving about in a way that the rules for alcohol just were not designed to do. And I don't know that we've really grappled as a city with how that's going to change enforcement.
Well, we talked about just there's so much about the policing part of it.
Yeah.
But then there's who's owning the dispensaries. And Walter Burnett said, he reps the West Loop, and he reps a lot. He goes, don't even come to me about a dispensary if you don't have an African-American partner.
Has the power to stop that anymore. So that was a lot of Walter Burnett.
Sure.
Lisa knows as well as I do that he is a fabulous quote.
Yeah.
And we love him.
Great point to say, but the point being that there's already some racial components to saying, you know what, the dispensary owners, the governor came out and said, oh, don't worry about it. In due time, there'll be black millionaires and Latino millionaires off of this. And it just seems to me, when we talked about, like, it's going to take 6 months because the medical marijuana dispensaries get first crack, and they're all white. So there's that component. There's the other component I read from the state of Illinois that said, and no one's really talking about this. They said, okay, yes, this is going to start on January 1st, but there's not going to be a lot of weed in these dispensaries because we're not up to speed. So don't get mad at us when your favorite product is not there.
And
we'll
there's
have
a provision
vaping,
in
but
the,
everything else won't be there.
And there's a provision in the law to ensure that medical marijuana patients have first dibs, essentially. So nobody knows how that's going to play out, because it's not as if there's like a truckload of marijuana waiting outside the Illinois borders to be trucked in at, you know, 12:01 a.m. January 1st. Please let me know and I will come take pictures.
You do have this group of aldermen. I'm not sure how this will go, but you do have a group of aldermen who are saying, hey, let's wait until what, July 1st?
Yeah. Yeah.
To do this, let's make sure that, you know, there's some diversity in the ownership of these dispensaries. We don't need to hurry. We're not going to lose a lot of revenues. I would argue that they probably will.
Yeah, I think the mayor said, look, we can't let people develop a habit, ba-boom chink, of going to Oak Park or going to Evanston, because then, you know, the dispensaries, which are, you know, this is part of the mayor's plan to solve the massive budget deficit in 2021. Like, I keep feeling
like this is going to put a big dent in $800 million?
Well,
more than the casino.
So the deficit right now, best case scenario for 2021, is over $1 billion. So it's even worse next year than it was this year.
Because of the pension.
And so this is part of the mayor's plan to sort of, you know, bring new revenue, because it's not rocket science. You either increase revenue, cut spending, or borrow money. The city can't borrow any more money. It's highly leveraged. The city says, well, everybody's freaking out about property taxes. Okay, well, we can't raise property taxes. Well, then you got to figure out how to bring new revenue in.
Weedapalooza.
Yeah, no kidding.
And the casino right now is dead in the water as well. And that is all dependent on what the state does. So who knows?
You are bringing me down, Heather.
Hey, you know what?
Put that on my tombstone.
Give me a 10 seconds of this and I'll let you guys go. But, you know, really lit up my phones today. I'm going to bring it up on the radio show tomorrow. As we're in the holiday season now, I'm noticing more and more pets in restaurants, bars, and stores. Mm. And I was at the second floor restaurant bar at Zachary by Wrigley Field. It's kind of a nice upscale area.
Yeah.
Little jazz music combo in the corner.
Very fancy.
People
are
having, I know, it was lovely. Somebody was in from out of town and we were having a drink and I thought I'll go there. And for me to get down the way past the bar, where there's some tables over here, there's a bar over there, but there's a dog leash stretching from one to the other because the lady at the bar is having a drink, but her dog is over by the tables rooting around, and she's got him on the leash, and you kind of had to work your way around that. And I've seen a lot of dogs in stores, not just hardware stores, and or bicycle shops, which to me are okay, but in restaurants and bars as well. And and my phone line just lit up with people who I thought a lot of times people see a dog in a store and they go, oh. You know, and they pet him. What's his name? I have one like this, too, and they scratch his belly. People were pissed off. They do not like this.
Where's Alderman and Terrace when you need him?
Yeah, exactly.
Like he was big into
the animal guy.
Horses,
yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
I've seen lots of dogs recently on the L, too. You can have service animals, obviously.
Well, that's what everybody has now. It's my service animal. I will talk about that soon. Guys, we're out of time. By the way, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah.
We're having the big Mincing Rascals hoo-ha next Monday?
Right.
Okay.
We won't tell you where. It's not at Ceres.
That's the first thing John says.
Not the first part of it.
We could move it if you guys like. Don't you think this is going to be good for business? Who wants to go there not having been there? I want to go there. I've never been there.
I'm hearing a lot of people say, be nice to Ceres. You guys quit talking about it. You know, quit saying that they're over-serving people and blah, blah, blah. So that it can hurt them.
Best publicity they ever could have had.
Are you kidding me? Well, I've been there, and I don't know if I'll go back. I like it a lot. But
the guy that runs it, his name is Mike, who will not give his last name. If it's a legitimate business, there's nothing wrong with saying the name of the guy that runs the joint. All right, Justin and Heather and Lisa and Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, buddy.
See, Bertrand couldn't be in the mix today, but he'll join us along with Austin Berg another time. We're produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We will drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.